We made it to February, dude. We're in February officially.
It's very nice. It's very nice indeed. Does it feel like we've transitioned in? Do you? So we have a natural transition point in high school. So my high school, most high schools in the school board that I'm a part of, is that we move to semester two. And that becomes an artificial, I guess, demarcation of the season. We're now, as of Monday, we're officially closer to the end of the school year than the beginning of the school year. You know, we're kind of at the apex. A quick observation, reflection. I'm still mentally shifting to the fact that I have the same students for the whole school year, which is very different for me in the past. Normally at this point, I would be shifting into a different set of students. I might be teaching the same course again. That can happen. You have it in both semesters, but I would have an entirely new crew of individuals to meet. And I'm mourning that just a little bit, nothing deep, but it's always cool to meet new people, if colleagues or students or otherwise. So I'm still processing through the implications of personal sort of, it's more like emotional, psychological implications of continuing the work with the same crew that I had. Elementaries does this already. You're aware of what it means to be with students, I'm guessing, for a whole school year. For me, I've been trained otherwise, that we have another set of individuals coming in. So I'm shifting. The second part to this is also the mapping and planning changes. So the relationships change, but the mapping and planning changes as well. Longitudinally, I haven't ever had to consider what it means to build something with students over a whole school year. Relationships, sure, you meet them. Students that I meet in semester one, I'm going to continue to be connected with in some way, even if it's just a, hey, what's up, in the hallway as they walk by, right? But I'm building relationships based on the year. I've just never had to consider building my pedagogy and my classroom resources on that. So I'm in a conversion time right now. What's your sense of shift? Do you have any equivalent or near sense of shift apart from the chronological?
You know what? When the report card goes home, it basically marks like term one's over, because it's all recorded on three pieces of paper. And we've accomplished some things, and we've set goals for the remainder of the year. So we just keep rolling along. There's no true marker, I would say, aside from that. And even like I've told my kids, you know, like we've started something new in writing. We've started something new in mathematics. So it's like, but it just, that's how it flows, right? That's just how the year flows in elementary. And so there is no big announcement that, oh, we're in term two. It's just like our learning continues. And the cool thing about it, which maybe I know it happens in high school, but maybe not as obvious, is because I'm with them all year and because there is no separation, there is no like, okay, all of you are leaving now and a new crew's coming in. It's really cool because, like, for example, when you talk in mathematics, you start a new unit or you start talking about a type of math, we're always trying to connect it to something we've already done in math. So it's like that spiral, like we're coming back to things because we need to, or we're learning new things on the fly because we need to. So it's more like, the one thing I can say that I've learned about how to teach mathematics in a more fluent way, in a more a friendlier way, is that not to dismiss things that pop up. Those teachable moments, they happen in math, like they happen in everything, but if we're working on something like we're going to be working with the spherical robots, we're going to be talking a lot about geometry. Now, we're jumping into geometry, but not, it's going to be more like, hey, Mr. Chidiak, look at what this thing does when I do this to it. And then it'll be a perfect moment to say, well, why do you think it does that? What does that remind you of with the mathematics we've already learned? And maybe they have something there, maybe they don't, but then it gives me an opportunity to just throw something at them or get them to discover something. And then we can hook that back in later when I'm formally teaching something along the way. So that muddies the water a little bit more because we're doing that all the time. There is no like marker point to say stop this and start this. And over the past few years, I've learned to try to avoid that as best as I can in mathematics, because I don't do that in writing. Like in writing, right now we're working on writing a narrative. And so it's not like, boom, never think about writing a friendly letter again. No, take what you learned in the friendly letter that's going to help you with the narrative, and let's just keep going. Like, let's just keep folding things in. So to answer your question, I would say it's the report card, or for some students, a new IEP. But aside from that, my flow doesn't involve like a boom, we're in term two. Sometimes there's talk like, hold on, it's February. We've been doing whatever we've been doing for 5 months. Why is it that you are still not fluent around this when I've supported you and scaffolded you? And then they look at you funny. It's like, I want you to reflect on that for a minute. We've been doing this every day for this amount of time. What is it about what we're doing that you will not allow into your routine process? And it's not done in a negative way. It's just like, are you kidding me? We've been doing this for 5 months. This should be automatic. There are some things that pop up like that where I'll remind them how long we've been there. But I noticed something. I need to bring it to your attention because it's really bothering me. Can I do that? For people, okay, yeah, you're on mute, which is awesome. The mute ninja. Yeah. I want to show you this here. These lines. I've never really noticed these lines before behind me.
The mathematics of your screen?
The mathematics of like my room, the screen, the way the camera is angled. And it's reminding me of the crazy kitchen in Ottawa at the Museum of Science and Technology, mm-hmm. which is bringing back a lot of really good memories, because whenever I would go to that museum, the first thing I would go to was the crazy kitchen. Have you ever been?
I think I may have walk it through. I won't, spoiler alert, I don't want to speak to it, but I'm wishing, just on a side note, I'm wishing right now that as you're talking, I could do a trace on the screen because I'm running it with my mouse just to be able to highlight the image behind you, because mm-hmm. I can see the geometry there. So you do your example. I don't want to drop the spoiler alert because I may know of what you're talking about, but it's in a different format.
Okay, so at the Museum of Science and Technology in Ottawa, the museum's been redone. So I've not been to the museum since it's been redone. It was closed for like a year or something. But before that, one of the main attractions is a kitchen, and it's tilted. And so when you walk into the kitchen, your brain does funky stuff. Like, I can't explain the science at the moment, but basically there are handlebars everywhere, and you got to grab onto them because your brain is like, there's something wrong here. You're going to fall over. And it basically, it's a kitchen, but it's crooked. And so the whole room is crooked, and you're trying to navigate through this 1960s kitchen, which is really cool. And because of that fuzzy feeling you get in your brain when you enter into the room, I loved it. So I would run right for the kitchen, and I'd walk through the kitchen several times as like my parents, they were probably like, oh God, here we go again. Roland's in the kitchen, right? But so I'm looking at these angles, and I'm talking math, and it's just reminding me of, I used to call it the crooked kitchen, but I just Googled it, and apparently it's called the crazy kitchen. So now I've got the itch. The next time I go to Ottawa, I'm just going to throw the kids in the car and say, we're going to the Museum of Science and Tech. And you know, this is the beauty of making connections and having a schema, right? Because if you could go into my brain right now, you would feel like if somebody could scan my brain, if I had my wearable glasses on right now, it could record what's happening in my brain, the waves and the feelings I'm getting, and I could send them to you digitally, and then you could see what's happening inside of my head. I've got this warm feeling because I have lots of good memories from that museum. In fact, when I was in university, and doing lots of volunteer work, I spent a lot of my volunteer time working at the Museum of Science and Technology. And all I did was, I was responsible for a craft table. And so kids at the museum would come to the table, and there'd be a theme every week. And I was like the wannabe teacher, the rent-a-teacher. And they would sit down with me and I would talk to them about the science of whatever the activity was. And they would color something or make something and then be on their way. And for me, that was like, that was epic. So think of this. Every Saturday morning, I would go to the museum for 2 hours. And before my shift, I would walk around the museum, visit the kitchen. And after my shift, I would walk around the museum and visit the kitchen. And I could do it all for free because I was a volunteer. I worked there. I had a badge. Like it was like my dream come true. So thank you, mathematics. Thank you to the struggle that I've been experiencing teaching numeracy, because look at what is bringing me right now. And I wish that I had a wearable right now that could record this good feeling that I have. It might be the serum, but I'm gonna say it's not. I'm gonna say it's the memories, it's the prior experience, it's the making connections, it's the power of the internet. As I'm looking at pictures of the crazy kitchen, it's bringing back these great feelings. So big thanks to all of that. The glasses, I want to update you on the glasses as you continue working on the sketch. Michael Leonard was in my room the other day. He brought me the mobile devices for the Spheros. So a big thumbs up to Michael for doing that and for supporting myself and my kids through that. As I'm talking to Michael, you know, he's talking about the podcast. He was listening to the podcast. We were talking about the glasses. We were talking about innovation. It was like a really good chat. It was nice to chill with him for a bit before school. So after our last talk, I went to the website. And I came even closer to pulling the trigger and to purchasing the glasses. But I'll tell you something legit stopped me. And let me tell you what it is. So as I went deeper into the website and learned more about the product and what it can offer me, I realized, as I'm reading, I'm gathering information, the importance of visiting their showroom to be fitted for the glasses. Because what I want to do is hit purchase and have them mailed to me and just get them and put them on. But the more I was reading about the calibration of them, the more I realized the importance of me sitting with someone who's going to put them on my face and do the math to figure out how far away the glasses are from my eye, the way it fits over my ears. Because if I put them on and they're not calibrated properly, nothing will pop up on my screen. So I can purchase my glasses and they'll fit to my head and they'll work for me. But then when I meet up with you at the Lank in a couple of months to have some good barbecue and to chill, you put them on and you'll be rolling. I don't see anything. That's because the measurements of like my eye to ear and my head and all that is not the same as yours. Therefore, you're not going to get the same immersive experience that I get from my glasses. And so I thought, do I really want to drop that kind of money to have a product that's going to come to me and frustrate the hell out of me? Because when I get those things, I want to put them on and I want to use them. Do I want to do that? The answer is no, I don't. So I was able to hold myself back with a really good reason, and that's that I don't want to drop that kind of money to get a product that isn't going to work. Now, am I going to, you know, I was saying this to Michael and we got a good laugh. Am I going to say to my wife next Saturday morning, hey, honey, hold down the fort. I'm going to Toronto to talk to somebody at a store about buying a pair of glasses that are over $1,000 that can do a very limited set of things for me. Not going to go over well. So, getting to Toronto to do all that isn't going to happen anytime soon. But I after our conversation, Clough, like I was so much closer to purchasing those glasses. And Michael and I had a really good laugh how that would go over with our partners. Hey, Saturday morning, who cares about all the stuff that's happening today? I'm going to TO. I'm going to get fitted for a pair of glasses that are over a grand. See you tonight.
Okay, so I have another layer to add to the See, this is where, are we at a point where we need to start branding these glasses? Like, we're conceptualizing our needs and depending on somebody else to make it for us. So do we officially make them? Like, how do we want to, what do we want to call this? This is our next product. This is our next product. Let's look it in the face, to coin a phrase. So I'm looking in your face and I'm like, those are, and what do we want to call them? Come on, man.
Well, the first answer is just the decoded spectacles. I don't know. Because really, can we stop and think about this for a second? Everything we're talking about is about decoding something. We're talking about decoding human behavior, decoding like human processes within the head. We're talking about taking something we can't see and making it visible. That's what we're talking about. That's what I want them for.
This feels big. I spectacle I like. It's kind of old timey.
Yes, I want something vintage.
You want vintage.
The vintage spectacles? The modern vintage spectacle? I don't know. You're the creative one with all this nonsense.
I'll get there. I have some scribbles down here. Let me add the layer to it and maybe we'll circle back. But you know, like, so we've got the kombucha. So we have our beverage line. We have the publishing. We have the media. I mean, Sked Media is everything. Okay, so now we're actually working on our empathy engines. Empathy engines.
The empathy engine.
So that's just the company. Empathy engines. Oh my God. Like the empathy engines. But one of the products in the empathy engines line is the...
The vintage spectacles.
You just want to call it the spectacle?
I don't know.
Oh my gosh, because
it's vintage eyewear. Vintage eyewear.
Is the eyewear an actual eye?
No, dude.
Like, do we do the letter I?
Oh, sure.
Vintage eyewear.
And you could even, the eye could be sideways. So the eye doesn't have to go up and down, it could be sideways.
We could. Like
spectacles.
Okay.
Focals. We can't call them focals because the place in Waterloo is called North Focals, Focals by okay. North. So we don't want to, we don't want to do that, peeps.
Let's circle back to that. Let me give you the next layer to this. And I love how you introduced that idea of it not only being inwardly useful, outwardly useful. So me putting on your, see, and then I want to call it.
Let's just, whatever, just let's move because sitting here doing this is not.
I know. It's not pushing us. Yeah. I want to come like eye specs or something or
whatever.
Okay. So me trying on your wearable, how it doesn't work for me necessarily. I like that idea of the tuning, it has to be kind of fitted, updated, because if we're trying to make it truly not only a device that enhances, let's say, your empathy, eyeglasses. Okay, there it is. If I put on your eyeglasses, that works. If I put on your eyeglasses, then I don't get the same experience. They would have to be tuned to me. I love that because what that means, a couple different things. The ergonomics of it, your head's different than my head. The distance between your ear, top of your ear and your eyeball and your nose and all that kind of stuff, it's different from mine. So they would have to be tuned. Second layer to that, I like the idea though that once they fit physically, they automatically start to create an experience that might not be tuned to me. So that could be everything from just the user interfaces and how you have it organized, the color scheme, the haptic response, like everything that sort of gives you your cueing system is not mine. So I love that. Let me add another layer to this. What about how eyeglasses communicate with other eyeglasses? Because I will tell you, as you and I are working right now, the cueing system for me to go ahead that you just used is a cueing system for you. I'm putting my hand up indicating that I'm ready to move on, and I'm reading it as he's telling me I'm ready to move on. Okay? So there's this constant, really crazy feedback loop that's going on. If our eyeglasses are picking that up, if they're picking that up, and that they're transcribing it into information that makes sense to me. So you in your head think to yourself, I want Clough to move on. So I do a hand gesture. If I do not have the sort of the, if I don't have the inborn talent to be able to read that hand gesture to move on. I'm actually waiting for another cue, either auditory, Clough, go ahead, or something else that kind of just gives me the tap. Okay, he's just giving the he's just moved his hand. Clough, that means to transition to the next idea. So what we now have are eyeglasses that talk to each other. Okay, so we have eyeglasses that talk to each other, and in doing so, they talk to the user. What if in that information that's being communicated is also, you ready for this? Your brain patterns, and I can tell whether or not you're honestly wanting me to move on.
That gets dangerous. I'll tell you why. So I don't want you in my head.
So I'm introducing the potential next level here, right? So in the pursuit of our cyborg EDU line, which is highly experimental, that's our lab. We can't even talk to that, okay? That's decoded cyborg. We're not even in that one yet. But the idea that the voice in our head is ours, and truly the person that we are communicating with. Now, I would believe that even in our first generation, one of the first security features is that you can turn off broadcast. Right? You're turning off the broadcast. But let's go through that. I want to talk about the optional broadcast feature of our eyeglasses.
Okay, I never thought I'd say this. And this is, this is Andrew Campbell being channeled through me right now. Mm-hmm. The fact that we would have something created that could possibly go into your head and gather information about your thinking and whether you're being honest or dishonest, that scares me. And I'll tell you why. Because sometimes I'm going to lie to you and I don't want you to know that I'm lying to you. So let's just, it's out there now, right? Because people are going to be like, why would you not want people to know? Because I'm going to friggin' lie to you sometimes. And I don't want you to know. Now, I'm willing to say that out loud. I know other people are thinking the same thing. They're not going to say it out loud. They're just going to cower in a corner and say, I don't want this stuff. They won't go there. But sometimes I don't want to know. You know what, Chris? When I sent you the link to one of my vlogs this week, you always do a good job of providing me with a star and a wish, right? And you do it in such a nice way. But I don't want to be able to get your brain waves and find out, Chris thinks this is absolute garbage, but look at what he says to me instead. I don't want that because I think it might fragment our relationship. And I guess I want to keep being your friend, and I don't know how it'll affect me if I go into your head and every time you talk to me, you broadcast brain waves that show me you're not interested. You don't want to be my friend. You're just, it's part of the routine. You talk to me a couple times a week and you wish you didn't, but you do. It frightens me, but at the same time, it excites me. So I just wanted to say out loud that I like being able to broadcast and not broadcast. And I'll tell you why. If I'm in a room with my wife and we're encountering a situation where we need to get out of that space and I can't say anything, I want those brain waves to get to her so she can be like, okay, we're on the same page. We got to get the hell out of here. Now, we can do that with a look. We can do that with a look. And I think we've talked about, maybe we haven't spoken on the podcast about this, but my wife and I have an agreement that when we go out to a restaurant or something, if we walk into the restaurant and there's somebody or something happening in the restaurant that does not fit with our comfort zone, we do this thing where we know it's time to go. And now usually what happens is it's a student that we don't want to connect with for whatever reason. It's kind of a dicey situation, or a former parent or a current parent or a colleague, and we just don't want to go there. Then it happens and there's no questions asked. It's, I might look at her and say, yeah, I'm not feeling this tonight. And we're out. And we've done it. And as we're going, the kids are like, what are you doing? We agreed, this is where we're going to eat tonight. What are you doing? You're horrible parents. They start to rip into you. And then when we get in the car, it's listen, sometimes we're going to have to get up and go for whatever reason. I'll give you a really good one that has nothing to do with parents or students. A few years ago, I taught a student whose father was an undercover police officer. And I knew he was an undercover police officer. And I won't give any more information than that, but I will tell you the family, for whatever reason, we were at a Tim Hortons in Kitchener. And I don't remember what happened. We were hungry. We're like, let's just stop at Timmy's and we'll get a sandwich and a donut, what a drink. We're sitting there and we're eating. And a couple of really shady people, if I can say that, walk into the Tim Hortons. And I'm being stereotypical here, okay? They didn't look like they were, they looked shady. There was something about them that did not sit well with me.
You were triggered.
I was triggered.
Something triggered you.
Something triggered me. And I, but here's what added to that. Normally be like, oh, they're humans like I am. And as if they don't bother me, then there's no reason for me to be worried about anything. But who follows them is the undercover police officer looking as disheveled as they are. And he walks in and we make eye contact. But I know enough not to pursue, not to give him one of these, or like I give nothing. I look, he looks, I go back to the conversation with my family. They all go into the bathroom and I say to my wife, it's time to go. And there was no, what are you talking about? We're having a good time. She looked at me. She's like, okay. We literally started rolling up the paper around the food. The kids are like, what are we doing? We just sat down. You know what? Let's get the food. We can eat at home. We're not far from home. It's time to go. We need to go. And you know, and I gave her another look like, get out of here now. Like there's the, okay, we need to go. So we put our, then there's the, we need, like, you need to go now. I said, I will bring the food to the car. You guys go to the car. So they go to the car, get the food, get out of there. And then, you know, she's dying. Like she's on her phone and I can hear my phone going ding, ding, ding. Like she's getting everything that's up here. She's getting out so that when I do look at my phone, we can talk. And then when we finally did talk, I said, I saw a dad of a student in my class. He's an undercover cop. He looked like garbage. So we got to, like, he's doing something. Something's going on. They're at the Timmy's. We're not at the Timmy's. And so that was it. But like, imagine if I didn't even have to say anything. Imagine we're both wearing our glasses. I go to bite into my sandwich and she says, we need to go now. But it's me that's sending that signal. Amazing. I love it. So in that regard, useful. But when my wife says to me, how does this dress look? And she's got her glasses on, my glasses are on, and she's like, you're a jerk. And I haven't even said anything. Not good, bro. Not good. So I can't even keep up with our, I'm now this businessman that doesn't even know the business he's running anymore.
I was about to try and map out. Maybe I'll get it onto this sketch, the map out of our, Decoded Industries. Yeah, or no, Decoded Industries. I'll figure out a better name for it. Decoded, I don't know. Decoded Media, the so, DM.
Where do you want to go from here? Because I don't want to interrupt you. I want you to get back to that sketch.
It's all good. I do have a bit of a shift. And so part of it, I will say on the front end, I wish I had the name of the TED Talk. Part of this was inspired again by that same episode of Wearables. So the dude that could hear color. And then there was another element in there about voice donors. So the individuals that can actually recreate the voices on digital devices to sound more like the potential voice of the actual individual, giving them agency and voice and authenticity and sense of self. Again, that connection between tech and empathy. And I believe the third part or act three, I'm pulling from a different style. This American Life, you're the ones that say, they say act three, but basically it was in there where they went one deeper, because I will tell you right now, Roland, there are apps out there that come with a headset. It is a commercially available headset that will give you brain feedback, a really low level MRI, and you can get a visualization of your brain patterning at a fairly, at an accurate level enough that you could use that information to reflect upon your own mindset. You could take your mindful mindset, put on the halo. I wish I knew the product. There's a halo you put on and the app would gather the data. It's sensitive enough to give you something that, if not reliable, it would definitely be interesting. It would be nothing for us to actually include that in the contacts of the eyeglasses so that you could actually get brain feedback included in the heads-up display in the lenses. So
there's a headband called the Muse headband, and it's technology-assisted meditation. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, that's one of the products. That's one commercially available, financially viable, right?
Yeah, it says here that it translates your mental activity into the guiding sounds of weather to help you find focus, calm. Busy mind, stormy weather, calm mind, peaceful weather.
Yep.
Amazing, I love it.
So it's there.
$249.
You know, we pair with this company, right? Because a big part of it, it's the hardware software thing. They've already figured out the actual cyborg. They've figured out the interface. It would just be a matter of us trying to figure out how to work it with the eyeglasses. So, total different shift. I was in reading Twitter this past week, wondering if you caught any of the information, any of Doug Robertson's feed. There was a really quick.
Not really. No.
Okay. There was a really quick drop on there. I'm gonna read it because it's. I think you'll get the level here, and I couldn't find any other chatter about it. I'm assuming that there were some back channel conversations. So someone posted to Doug. So this is the post, the first post. This is the one that I noticed. So a teacher here was forced to step down because she retweeted a tweet castigating those DC teens. So the story that was popping up in the last couple of weeks about the teens from the Catholic school and being at the same event as Nathan Phillips. The story is out there. I'm not looking to sort of go back through the story again, unless of course you want to add something to the shape of it. Castigating those DC teens. She retweeted at the weird teacher's tweet. So this is Doug, right? And lost her job as a result. Wild. Doug posts, I've reached out to her too, and we've talked. It's crazy and terrible what they did to her. Completely agree. But it just got me, It drew in Paul McGuire. It drew in Stephen Hurley. It drew in Andrew Campbell. Of course, it drew in Lisa Thompson, you know, our education minister. It got me thinking about, again, how conversations move in relation to our opinions, in relation to our jobs, in relation to our comfort zones. It stopped me for a second. And I thought, wow. On one hand, I thought, my initial reaction, I was like, yeah, but that's the States. That's the States. I actually got this really crazy distancing thing. Like somehow that happens because it's in the States. Not the story, but the sharing of an opinion. Now this is, I mean, castigating is a, it's that's not just sharing an opinion. You know, that idea of castigation, you're going deep. Like you're really, you're going for the emotional throat of the idea. But it did get me thinking about, again, about our social spaces and our digital spaces and being how close the line between being monitored and being followed is. It's timely based on the conversation we just had on Voice Ed and how Stephen mentioned that he's finally picked up our feed. So it's that idea of what you and I are doing right here. It does exist in a wider sphere, whether or not I want to acknowledge it or not. I'm still kind of playing out what the deeper implication is to me. But it kind of stopped me for a moment when I thought about, you know, and I think I've heard the story before. I think I've heard of other individuals getting in trouble. I don't know if I've ever seen the, I think what kind of stopped me is, you know, I've followed Doug for a while. Like I've followed his stuff. I talked to him on Chasing Squirrels. It's sort of the, I'm astonished. I'm rattled a bit. I'm curious as to what that process would look like. I didn't pursue what the actual original tweet was. I guess I'm mildly curious about that to see what the level of offense they could be justifying this on. Like, it's a story I would like to know more about. I haven't had a chance to pursue it though. What are your thoughts?
Like you said, like, it's wild stuff. I've actually expressed my thoughts about that whole thing on Facebook, which, are you still on Facebook, Chris? I don't know where you are. Did you see what I posted?
I did. And part of it is Facebook is kind of like my, if it's really is my, if I got time, I go there. Yeah.
That's fair. And for me, it's like, I don't know. I'm there just like I'm on Twitter and Instagram too, but
you give it time. You give it time.
Yeah. So like in this day and age, people like to share what they're thinking and they like to broadcast it. And even if they don't want to broadcast it, it is broadcasted. Like when you put something like that out there, or you respond to someone with something, it's like getting into your head, but you're doing it to yourself. Like you're exposing what's happening up there. And it's tough, man. Like even my little conversation on Facebook. So what I did was I took something someone posted. I took a screenshot of it and I asked him permission if I could post it. And he said, yeah, man, go for it. So, and I posted his opinion. And then I followed up with my comment. And I think I can share my comment here. I don't think it's going to get me fired or anything like that. My comment was, yeah, there are two sides to every story. But I too once was a high school student who made some poor choices and who acted in ways that now I look back and I could say I'm embarrassed of my behavior. Was it the school's fault that I behaved a certain way? I want to say no. Was it 100% my parents' fault that I acted a certain way? I want to say no. In fact, my parents were relatively strict with me. And so maybe some of my stupid behavior or choices came from being so like locked down, maybe. But what I can tell you is when I see the video of those students and Nathan Phillips, when I see that, I see things that those students are doing in that video that remind me of when I made poor choices as a high school student. And so I question their behavior. There's also video that surfaced from a group of females showing some of those boys catcalling them and saying things to the females as they are walking past them at some other point in this day. And so I think, okay, a couple of things speak to me and speak to the immature, poor choice Roland in high school. Number one, they're wearing the red hats. And those red hats, I'm sorry, for those of you that are cool with the red hats, that's good for you. You make your choice. To me, the red hat stands for negative things for me. They're wearing the red hat. They were catcalling females earlier that day, or engaging with females in a way that I would say is not appropriate. And then the looks on their faces when Nathan Phillips and his people approached them. I'm told they were approached by the protesters, whatever, fine, they're approached, good. The looks on their faces, I know those looks, dude. I've had that look on my face before. And so my position is, if Nathan Phillips approached them and got in their face, I don't think that's appropriate. I don't. He shouldn't have done that. They shouldn't have been catcalling females. They can wear what they want, but with the catcalling and the dumb smirk on their face, wearing that hat, that to me is a package deal that doesn't sit well. So my response when I posted my friend's post was to say, blaming Catholic schools is not the right thing to do, because my brothers and sisters in education who teach in Catholic schools, we don't teach people to operate that way. And blaming parents is not 100% accurate either, because I made a lot of dumb choices, and it wasn't because of my parents. It was because I was dumb, and it was because I felt I needed to express myself, and I felt like I wanted to be accepted by other people, and I went about doing it the wrong way, in my opinion. And one of my friends said on my post, hey, you know what? Those kids made a poor choice. They should just own it and move on. Extreme Ownership by Jocko Willink. Say what you did wrong and move on. It's turned into a huge thing. They've gone on TV. They've had interviews, blah, 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 blah. So that's my position. My position is, I look at those kids and I've seen some bits of information, and I'm making a decision and I'm basing an opinion based on the information that's been made available to me. If more information comes out and I can see it, then I can change my mind, because I have a mind and I can change it. But that's where I stand right now. So I think what I've just expressed to you is nothing that's puts me in jeopardy of losing my job. It's my opinion, and it's based on things I've read and things I've seen and reactions I've seen over time. So that's kind of where I'm sitting with that. I don't know. I'd love to know what that person, like what they exactly did that got them into trouble, because maybe they did something that I would deem inappropriate.
Mm-hmm.
Even speaking their mind, there's a way to do it that's appropriate, and there's a way to do it that's not appropriate.
I haven't chased it. I haven't chased it at all. And to your point about there sort of being more in the story, there was also another party there, individuals that were provoking the boys prior to that. And I forget the name of the group. The story becomes more layered. I don't have a really great place to kind of, like, I haven't shaped out an opinion. What you're saying as far as what we're doing and selling is not what was on the screen when you refer to, you know, your Catholic teacher colleagues. And I think that's a very important, I think that's a kind of like a critical piece to keep in the conversation at some point. I don't know when you introduce it, but that idea that to recognize you don't get to include, on one hand, you don't get to sort of demean Catholic education because of the singularity of these individuals. And I think it's also the good distance is to say, and what we do inside is not that. And it's almost, there's a little element of kind of hanging the kids out to dry. But like you said, there's an element of accepting that they did a thing that, if you're going to be truly sort of sympathetic, compassionate, empathetic, even in your stance that you may have been protesting something that you believed in, even if there's a small part of that, the human element can't be lost entirely. Like the cost of including in other people's sort of views that like this was wrong, it inevitably, I think, makes it more accessible for more people to really understand what's going on in here. The first things out of the gate were very much about Nathan Phillips. And as the story evolved, it became bigger than Nathan Phillips. That lens is really zoomed out. And I think it's really difficult to sort of exist in that big sphere because there's a whole lot of stories. Ultimately, it still comes down to what part of the story do you want to focus on? You're going to go back to the part of the map that you really want to pay attention to. I haven't heard much chatter about it lately, but I also haven't been chasing it. So maybe I've left the map altogether. Bringing it back to ground where it started, though, there's an individual that allegedly in the story, because I haven't followed it that lost their job because of retweet, not even posting their own opinion, but retweeting somebody else's opinion. Sorry, excuse me. And I just found that kind of fascinating. It sparked me up. Yeah, it sparked me up.
And we don't know the full story about any of this stuff, right?
So we're not on the map. That's part of it. I don't know where we are, where our story, our understanding in relation to this widening lens. Is it a cautionary tale? Do you take anything as part of this as a cautionary tale?
You're responsible for what you say. You're responsible for what you tweet. You're just responsible for yourself. So did we talk about this morning? If I'm going to make a decision, lately I feel like before I act, I really think about what I'm about to do and why I'm about to do it, which is a good thing. Like, I mean, it's stemming from doing a vlog. So it's not a high risk thing. It's just me putting myself out there in video format. But before I speak about what I'm going to speak and before I hit record, do I stand behind what I'm about to say? And do I stand behind it enough that I'm willing to take extreme ownership of it? And the answer to that question is it's really helping me. And I think it's helping me because of the reflection. Again, it's so cool to see how these things are interrelated. Like if I just talk like this and I say, oh, it's connected to me blogging, people are like, what? I don't see the connection. But it is connected because
it's inside outside though. You know what I mean? Inside outside. Like you have to be in your process to see those connections. I think that is the wow factor of having lived experience connect with big thought.
Like I'm connecting the dots to a picture that nobody else can see. They just, if I were to show them my picture, they just see dots everywhere with no numbers beside them. They wouldn't even know where to begin. Yeah. But I know where to connect the dots. So that's kind of where I land. And let me tell you, none of it's easy.
No.
It's not easy to admit you did something wrong. It's not easy to, like, I deal with that every day. I think I'll be dealing with it for the rest of my life. It's just something that I live with. It's not easy. And unfortunately, I make a lot of poor choices. Like nothing, you know, nothing that's going to get me into trouble, but poor choice is just like, I don't know. You just stop and you think, why did I do that again? Did I think before I did that? I had a really funny situation yesterday. Yesterday, the theme for Friday yesterday for me was cake. That was the theme. And if you looked at my Instagram story, you'd see that the day started with cake, and cake was predominantly the thing that had me moving yesterday. And it's funny, near the end of the day, I was in the staff room. There was still some cake left over. There was a big slab cake. One of our staff, yesterday was her last day with us. And so she brought in a cake to say thank you. And I was joking with her the day before, and I'm like, I'm going to devour that cake. And she's like, yeah, go nuts. So the first thing I do is I get to school. I go in the staff room. There it is. Take a picture of it, take a slice, and leave. And then near the end of the day, I was talking to our the school librarian, and I looked at the slab, and there was just a hunk of a cake. And I said to her, I just want to grab a fork and just start eating right off the cardboard. And she's like, go for it. And I'm like, I think it's going to cause some difficulty with my staff members because they might want a piece. And if they just see me eating this gigantic piece right off like the serving tray, this is going to be a problem. And she's laughing, and I'm actually in a moment of like serious reflection. Like, okay, so if I make that decision, what's going to happen? People are probably going to be upset. There'll be a handful of people that won't say anything, but they'll walk out and they'll be like, I can't believe you did that. Then there might be the one or two that say, what are you doing? Why would you do that? There are other people here who want to eat that. Am I okay with that, with my decision? So the answer was like, no. If it was one piece, like if it was one piece, a reasonable size piece for me, I would have done it just for giggles to say, okay, listen, before you rip me, I was going to take it. So I thought it'd be funny if I just ate off the cardboard and had you all freak out and then tell you it was a one person piece and I was taking it. So I just decided to eat off the thing and save a plate or whatever. Then they might understand. But anyway, long story short, I ended up just cutting a piece and walking away. And then to keep the theme going, they were having a party for this teacher. And I was in the hallway talking to one of my students when her teaching partner was coming out of the staff room holding a slab of cake that she was taking to the room to celebrate the teacher with the students. And I said, oh my God, is that cake? And she's like, come on down if you want a piece. I'm like, you know what? I've had enough cake to last me a lifetime today. It's gotten me through the day, but I'm not gonna invade that cake. But that was the theme yesterday, was cake, and it got me through the day. That's where I'm landing there.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Cake's a good theme. You know what? Cake, actually, no, I'll double down. Friday cake is even better theme. Even better.
And you know this business of like, you couldn't wait till Friday came because then you'd have the weekend. I was reflecting on that yesterday too. I was just so excited yesterday that the week was going to be over because it was a long, trying week. And you know what? I needed a break. And the things I'm doing this morning, like, you know, the voice ed radio bit that we did and doing this now, I'm starting to feel like this morning I woke up on my terms. You know, I started my day on my terms, and I've got 2 days to recharge and then get back to work. I wasn't proud that I couldn't wait for the day to end because I try not to wish time away, but it was a long week in elementary school this past week. So I needed to get past the work week and move into my time on the weekend.
You know, I look at it this way. If you're willing to post up about... if you're willing to post up about how awesome or how much you enjoyed a math, yeah, cheers, buddy, to how much you enjoyed working through a math lesson or, you know, a TED Ed club activity or any of these things, if you're willing to post that up and the joy that comes out of being productive, then we should with equal measure talk about the joy of relaxing. And that's where I land ultimately. I don't take offense. I don't land on the space where, you know, someone talks about, you know, really it's, you know, I'm really happy it's Friday. I don't take that as like a throwing shade on education. I don't look at it as like somehow crushing our kids and not caring about what's going on in our classrooms. And I've seen that dog pile happen. All of a sudden, you know, we shouldn't be expressing our joy of making it to the weekend. I will say I might question the idea of making it to the weekend like we're just crawling across the finish line. There's some self-care, serious self-care there. That's a separate discussion altogether. And I'm not about to lay it at the feet of my students like somehow it's their fault. Ultimately, I've chosen this career. I choose my work. I have choice in here. So to that end, I love it when I was funny because I used to be the guy that just wouldn't talk about downtime. I never included it. And it's not that it was sort of like when I was at work, I talked about work. When I was away from work, I would talk about the stuff that I do at home. But I've started to see that there's a finer granularity to it that makes actually both better. And I'll take it back to working with Jill Stambolich back in the day. Again, she invited me to come talk to her class. And we were talking a little bit about modern learning. Integrating, she was doing integrative studies, which is really cool. And in part of my talk about doing podcasting and how it's gotten me outside of my silo, and sometimes even outside of silos altogether, one of the students in the class said, you know, I close the door on my house and I open the door on school. And I am a different person, that there's no transmission between the two. And my initial I had a bunch of reactions, and I just landed on a realization that if I were holding that line, it's more work that I'm willing to do. I get it. There's some compartments. Sure. There are parts of us, we don't have the eyeglasses on. So I don't know if right now you're thinking, Clough, you're full of bull crap, like whatever, even though I'm going to smile right now, but I think you're a fool, Clough. I'm just pointing out, that idea that I look back on actually relational time that I missed out on by not including the joy of teaching in my downtime and the joy of weekending when I'm at work. Like, it's just, it was so much work. Relationships are work too, but what I'm talking about is how I was capping myself. I need access to those stories. I need access to my teacher stories on the weekend, and I need access to my lived experience away from teaching when I'm actually in the classroom. And I like that fatigue better. So that's all I got to say about that.
Right on. So I see that we've put in our time this week.
You good?
How's that sketch coming along?
I have it almost done, actually.
Okay. Do you want me to? Oh.
No, I can show you. I show you. I might put a couple more things just to touch it up. I think you'll like this one. Oops.
Okay, say something so the camera goes back to you.
Here we are. There it is.
I so, like it, man. I
does
like
that work?
It works.
Trying to work out the font and the typeset for our Empathy Engines product. That could go somewhere, dude. Someone's going to scoop it. You know what the fact of it is? We're giving it away for free. Someone's going to do their own eye spectacles or eyeglasses. They're going to talk to Muse. They're going to say, you know what? This is commercially viable cybernetics.
You know what kills me? It's not the money. Like, it's not the financial aspect of creating something like this that could possibly make us money. It's like the legacy thing. Like, can we create something that can go out into the world and like live on when we're done? And it kills me that you and I don't have the infrastructure to hold on to what we want to create and actually do it. And that somebody else is going to pick it up and they know they have the infrastructure and the support to make it happen. That kills me. It breaks my heart. Oh, well. You know, if it was meant to be, it was meant to be. What's meant to be is you and I are in a classroom and we're working with kids every day and we're helping them go out and to do their thing. So that's where we're at.
Dude, it's what makes sense to me right now. It's what makes sense, and it's what I feel comfortable making sense in. So we could shift. We could shift. Heck, maybe they'll reach out and say, hey, dudes, come and consult on this. That's a cool idea.
But we won't pay for your release time from
school. I know, eh? So I like that. I'm really hooked on this whole Empathy Engines, though. I think, like, DCP Empathy Engines.
Man. Let's keep playing with it because I know you want to keep it alive. And
yeah,
I don't mind.
Yeah, let's add layers to this as we go. So at some point, we got to put action first. We got to put action instead of words.
Mm-hmm.
How about this? Maybe this summer test drive. I'm gonna try making a kombucha. Well, just start simple. I don't know if I have the tech. I don't have the funds right now to drop in and start developing, you know, the hybrid Muse and eyeglasses. I just don't have that.
Okay, can I say something before we shut down?
Yeah, for sure, man.
I recently saw a Gary Vee video.
Apologies, I haven't watched it yet.
Don't worry about it. It's 30 minutes. Don't worry about it. I think when you do get to it, I hope it brings you some value. It did for me. And you'll see why I'm on this kick of like, I just need to do what I need to do and not worry about what other people might think or let my insecurities get in the way of doing something that's really going to end up benefiting me in the end and may benefit other people.
Okay.
You know how Gary does, like, ask Gary Vee, well, this young dude said to him, I've got this idea, I want to do this, but I don't have the money.
Okay. And
Gary said, that's not the issue. There's money everywhere. So it's not money that's stopping you. And then Gary explains where the guy can find money. So I think you and I need to continue. Seriously, like, let's keep playing with this Empathy Engines thing, because I think if we go by what Gary Vee's saying, we can find the money. It's the other things that we need. We need to find the people, the human resources that can that we can connect together to make something happen. I'm not saying we're going to go out and do this, but maybe there is a piece of this that we can bring to action. Maybe there is.
At some point, you know, we're setting little fires, right? And you feed them. Eventually, I think there's a whole lot more little fires probably you and I need to set before it kind of sets us jumping. But
can I give you just, I got to do this.
Yeah, do it.
Okay. You got your wearable glasses and you've got the whole Muse thing connected into the glasses. And the Muse thing's simple. A calm mind plays soft weather sounds and a not so calm mind plays bad weather sounds. It's as simple as you walk into my room with your glasses on, and I've got my glasses on, and we're both on broadcast mode. You walk in and you look at me and I just hear the sounds of bad weather. And I know that whatever it is I'm doing needs to stop because you might need to talk. It's simple as that. So instead of using that sound for myself to tell myself, oh, I'm not calm, I need to calm myself, I can get your information by that simple sound. That's information that's already collected and is already going to your cell phone to tell you about your brain, the little bits of brain action that's happening and that you need to relax or you need to ramp up, whatever. Like you said, Muse already exists. That information, there's an app for that. They're collecting that information from your head. The smart glasses already exist. I'm on a site right now called View. At the basic level, View functions as glasses, meaning you'll be able to get lenses that you can da-da-da-da-da, but that they come with integrated technology that you can do different things with. And these are $250. Like, the stuff, it's all there.
Mm-hmm.
We've got great ideas. So it's just killing me that this stuff isn't... People aren't thinking about it the same way we are, I guess, right?
Well, we also have the luxury of spitballing because we're playing with other people. Some of this is our ideas. Some of this is other people's ideas. And it's kind of like we're playing with Lego, but we didn't have to go into the Lego lab and actually design any of these kits, right? So we're creating without the cost. So
true.
Yeah, my pockets aren't deep enough. I like that. That's a fascinating idea because, you know, with broadcast, you could also have private broadcast and like any sort of classroom scenario, the students could be set up such that they're just broadcasting to you when they walk in the classroom. They're not broadcasting to each other necessarily. So there is that element of being able to notice because the student does come in and maybe you get a visual, maybe you just get the auditory. Maybe one kid's Storm or Sunny is slightly different. So again, back to that authentic voice, they're able to say, here is the sunny sounding music that I want when I'm in a nice neutral mindset. So as you've turned to your desk and you're grabbing your tablet or your day book, you can hear that tone come into the classroom of whatever their sunshiny positivity is. And you're like, yo, that's Clough walking in the classroom. I was wondering what kind of a mood he was in today. And then you're back and you're sort of into your activity. So we'll keep it a thing until we get tired of playing with it. I'm sure we'll find another bit of thought fuel to jet us up.
Sounds good to me.
All right, man.
Okay. Well, have a great day. Great weekend.
And, yeah, you too.
We'll be in touch.
Okay, man.
See ya.
Ciao.